Challenges that farmers are facing in the spring of 2020 are no joke. Too much water in some areas, not enough slaughter capacity across the country, destroyed demand, and forced to do business in unfamiliar ways. But keep putting one foot in front of the other, and we'll all get past these challenges. That's what we're talking about today.
Live from the Technicolor Basement of Dreams, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Alan Hoskins, President and National Sales Director for American Farm Mortgage and Financial Services. Then it's on to our Farmer Forum, or our Roundtable Rural, if you prefer. Panelist Mike Appert from North Dakota and Illinois' own Newman. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from AgPro Magazine. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Yeah, what a show, huh?
Yeah.
What
yeah,
a show. This will be great. Yeah, mm-hmm. Alan Hoskins.
Yes.
Alan is a thinker when it comes to what is happening in a time like this.
Okay.
And I don't have a real set agenda or anything for the conversation with Alan. I want to talk about how the financial system, the ag banking system is helping farmers, what farmers should be doing to make it easier to get that financial assistance. I want to talk about the challenges and how we're overcoming them together. But as far as saying, well, listen, I want to know from Alan exactly how to, that's not where I'm going. That's not where I'm going in this conversation. I want it to be, just get Alan's thoughts on what is happening in all of this.
Yeah. That's very Zen. It's like when you, with the tiny rake and the little thing of sand, you just sort of let the sand do the work
type of deal. That's one of the most ridiculous things that I think. Do you know how
you obviously need to rake some sand.
Do you know how long that sand raking would last in the Flory house? That is going to be a short minute is how long that would last before it's like, what in the heck am I doing? It would be gone.
Well, what if you use soybeans instead, or perhaps sorghum? You could do that instead. At least that would be relevant.
I'm not raking that crap. That is not happening.
Fair enough.
I'm not wasting time, and neither is Mike Appert or Chad Lehman. I got a feeling we're going to be talking with those guys about the challenges and how they're getting past those challenges. Mike's up in North Dakota. Got more rain. I'm not sure what his situation is going forward. We're going to find out here in a little bit. And Chad Lehman's a hog producer over in Illinois. He's got some obvious challenges that he is dealing with right now. All right, let's get to the news, man.
Well, Chip, yesterday President Trump tweeted, quote, oil prices are moving up nicely as demand begins again, exclamation point. Crude oil prices have been on the rise after tapping negative territory in a historic move. The government will make inventory data available this morning as futures continue to firm. Analysts believe gasoline prices have also bottomed. Now, Chip, meanwhile, this is interesting. The Texas Railroad Commission yesterday said it will not impose statewide crude oil production cuts. Wayne Christian, the commission's chair, said, quote, I don't believe pro-rationing is the magic bullet that will save the industry. He says, I refuse to implement an antiquated policy simply because it exists. So, Chip, it's a no for forced supply side management in Texas.
Well, you know what my response to that is.
I feel like you would say good. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. You let the market sort this stuff out is in the long run is usually my attitude. And when you've got two jokers like Saudi Arabia and Russia playing the games that they're playing, maybe you ought to just, not play the game.
Well, U.S. ethanol exports fell in 2019 for the first time since 2015, but remain elevated at 96,000 barrels per day on average in 2019. That's according to the Energy Information Administration. Now, that's down from the 2018 mark and the first fall in U.S. ethanol exports since 2015. However, the level of shipments was still at the second highest level on record. EIA says 39 countries are now importing U.S. ethanol. That's up, Chip, 34 in 2018. Brazil leads the list of buyers on U.S. ethanol.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's over. That's just over 3 million gallons a day, David. Mm-hmm. So you do that 365 days, average that over the course of a year, that's 1.1 billion gallons of ethanol that we exported. Mm-hmm. That's a good number.
U.S. overall ag exports in March firmed 5% from the prior month, which marked the strongest shipping pace since November 2019. But imports into the U.S. shot 17% higher, resulting in a monthly trade deficit of $502 million. USDA will update their outlook for U.S. ag exports May 29, and that could present a forecast ag trade surplus near the fiscal year 2019 mark of $4.6 billion, but that's the lowest since 2002. Chip, the European Commission says the EU will contract 7.5% in 2020 in its first economic forecast since lockdowns were imposed. That would be the greatest economic shock in the region since the Great Depression. And while China is currently short of their purchase commitments, Farm Bureau notes what Greg Dowd, top ag trade negotiator at the U.S. Trade Representative's Office, told us recently, and that is China and the U.S. have made progress in non-tariff barriers, which will pave the way for China to accelerate purchases to meet their phase one goal and improve U.S. ag's long-term competitive position in the Chinese market. Okay. The use of strategic reserves and or economic recovery in a post-COVID environment will also boost China's ability to meet its purchase commitments. Chip.
All right. Very good. We're going to talk to John Newton, the top economist at AFBF tomorrow morning on the show. So we'll get his take on what is going on there. Thank you, Davis.
You bet.
All right, let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of Ag Professional. She joins us right now. Margie, it's good to talk with you. Everything okay?
Everything's okay, Chip.
Good, good, good. Good to hear. Retailers, they really adjusted quickly to the social distancing. They implemented a lot of changes in a short period of time. The question now, Margie, is are we going back to pre-COVID practices or are we going to stay where we're at?
Yeah, when we look back at the trajectory of how COVID has affected ag retail's business, you know, we asked our audience in late March, how concerned are they that this will impact their business? And 81% said somewhat concerned or very concerned. And we followed up in late April and said, how big of an effect has COVID had on your business? And, you know, more than 56% answered negative or very negative. Now, in that, you know, you're saying that they've adopted new practices that have impacted business, whether that be delivering seed alone or not able to ride in a tractor cab as a salesperson. And I think now one concern would be come harvest. How comfortable are farmers going to be to have somebody riding in a cab in close proximity in the buddy seat? You know, that also has implications for not only product performance, but also troubleshooting and precision ag and monitors and equipment that are installed in the cab and folks just being able to help farmers understand how to use those technologies or troubleshoot them.
Yeah. I got a feeling that, you know, we're going to be learning some different ways to go forward still in the ag retail sector, Margie. And it's going to be interesting to see where we end up on it all.
Yep. We're going to be trying to poll our audience as well as report on all the things as they develop.
Excellent. Excellent, Margie. Thank you so much. That is Margie Eckelkamp, the editor of Ag Professional. We talk to her every Wednesday morning right here on AgriTalk. Coming up next, we've got Alan Hoskins from American Farm Mortgage and Financial Services right here on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at #AgriTalk.
Ding.
A little secret that nobody knows. Boy, I guess. There you go. Mm-hmm. But I remember when that when the Oh, geez, what was it? It was a multi-pack of CDs. I don't even remember how many it was, but it was George's 50 top number one hits.
In
one package. I loaded them all in the CD player in the truck and just let them
just let them
play. Yep.
Gold, baby, gold.
Absolutely. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me, and
Hello.
We are going to have a conversation right now with Alan Hoskins. Alan is the president of American Farm Mortgage and Financial Services. He joins us right now. Alan, it's good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm wonderful, Chip. It's great to be on with you. I have to admit, I was a little frightened when I heard you say earlier today you didn't have an agenda for our talk, because I know sometimes how our conversations can be.
Yeah. Every now and then they go on a tangent. I get that. But we're going to try to stay focused. Hey, I don't know. If you want to talk hors d'oeuvres or what steak is best right now, Alan, I'm willing to go down that path, I guess.
Chip, you're losing focus. You're losing focus, Chip.
Oh, darn it.
Sorry, Alan. I'm sorry, sir.
Davis, he never does that, does he? He never loses focus.
No, rarely. Right. Rarely. That's my job.
Yeah, that's Davis's job to lose focus. Oh, good grief. Okay, Alan, I know that you take what we're going to be talking about here, I know you take it very personally, because I know your beliefs. Mm-hmm. You're in the financial services, and there are people out there that will find this hard to believe, but you see yourself as a service provider. You are it's a service industry that you are in. And
absolutely.
Yep. And the efforts that are out there right now in the financial industry, the ag lenders in particular, are they adequate when you combine with the federal supports? Are banks and lenders and financial institutions doing enough to support agriculture?
I think, Chip, certainly in a general statement, I think the answer to that question is yes. Fortunately, there's still a fair number of ag bankers that went through the 80s. And certainly, this is not the 80s, don't get me wrong, but right. What was it? Mark Twain said, history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. We're kind of seeing something similar to that today in what we went through in the 80s, in the fact that there are so many challenges. You know, I don't know, Chip, that I've seen in my banking career a time where every segment of agriculture, much like the economy in general, every segment of agriculture is facing challenges. And challenges do create opportunities. And I know that's a cliched statement, but the reality of it is that's factual. And there are a lot of people that have experience. Now, let me say this. None of us have the perfect answer.
Right.
Because every situation is unique. And this is a time where I would say that long-term relationship with that lender is going to pay dividends to that producer.
Okay. Very good. Now, I think I get that, Alan, that long-term relationship with the lender, because they need to know your operation. They need to know what you are capable of doing to be a worthy credit risk, right? Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying, Chip.
Okay.
Because, for example, knowing the history of the borrower, and especially over the past 3 or 4 years, one of the positives that I think exists today, Chip, if we were facing what we're facing today, if you roll back the clock about 4 years ago, where we were just coming off of the highs in commodity prices, and candidly, there had been some bad habits developed, we've had time for producers to really hone their management skills, become more familiar with their numbers. And I will tell you, we're infinitely better off facing the challenges today because people are more prepared today than they would have been 4 years ago.
Interesting. That's interesting. Okay, now I want to flip this question around a little bit, Alan, or this thought process.
Mm-hmm.
From a farmer's perspective, are they doing enough to take care of the financial side? Are they using the government programs that are available to them adequately? Are they using that relationship with the financial institution? Are they using that relationship the way that they should?
I think, by and large, Chip, the answer to that question is yes.
Okay.
The PPP loan process, once it was deemed that agriculture could be a part of it, you know, certainly producers, from what we have seen, and I've got a couple of friends of mine that are CEOs of banks, one's in Kansas and one's in Nebraska, and I've talked to them this week. And we're seeing agricultural producers that are utilizing the programs, I think, very well. You know, certainly we would like to see the programs be more expansive. And in fact, if you look, there was a guidance that came out on Monday relative to the economic insurance disaster loan, where producers were now eligible for that program as well, in addition to the PPP. So I would say that we're seeing producers do a good job of recognizing, Chip, they don't necessarily have to be the expert, but they're learning enough about what the programs are. They're reaching out, or we're reaching out to them. I've seen both situations occur where they are, I believe, effectively utilizing the programs for the most part.
Okay. The EIDL, that's a longer-term loan with a very attractive interest rate on it, right, Alan?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Yeah.
The EIDL, you're looking at up to 30 years with about a 3.75% fixed interest rate.
Now, can you take some of your other – can you consolidate loans and move them to under this EIDL?
It's, Chip, more for funding the existing expenses, those type things. And one thing that I would caution producers to really look at, depending upon their loan size, if you're looking at an EIDL loan and it's under $25,000, there's no collateral required. If you get over $25,000, then they start looking at requiring basically a security interest in business assets. Now, how that could affect the borrower is, let's say that they have an existing banking relationship today, and that bank is doing their operating line financing, and so they have a first lien on crops, machinery, and equipment, that type of thing.
Okay.
And then they do an EIDL loan. An SBA comes behind that lender and takes a security interest position. Then let's say the farmer wants to change banks. So they go to a new bank. Well, when the old bank releases their collateral position, SBA moves to the first. They move to the head of the line.
Okay.
So it could potentially create a little bit of a challenge for producers if they have a need to alter their existing banking relationship somewhere down the line.
Gotcha.
I wouldn't say that's something, Chip, to be fearful of. I'd say that's something to be knowledgeable of.
Okay. All right. Very good. What are producers not making use of that they should? And I don't know if there's anything out there, Alan. Is there something?
You know, Chip, I really don't think at this point there is, because the EIDL and the PPP are the two main products.
Yep.
Now, that being said, one of the things that I would really counsel folks to think about is, we've spent a lot of time, and when I say we, the banking industry, we've spent a lot of time, Chip, telling producers over the past 4 years, know your cost of production, know your cost of production. You know, I feel like a broken record at times. Well, I'm going to amend that a little bit. And I'm not saying that knowing your cost of production is any less important, because it isn't. But here's something I think that is key today. Know your cash needs and the timing of those cash needs. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things we certainly don't know is what's going to happen over the next 6 months. I mean, good grief, Chip, the last time you and I were together, what we're dealing with today, we never even dreamed of.
Right, right.
But knowing the cash needs, and maybe looking at, let's go ahead and let's look at the balance sheet. Let's look at our cash needs. Let's look at where prices are today. And maybe is it time to look at rebalancing that balance sheet? Maybe it's time to look at some debt consolidation. Interest rates, long-term rates, are still very, very attractive. And if a producer's in a position, it may be time to go ahead today, not wait until this fall, and look at start rebalancing that. If a guaranteed loan is necessary, FSA still is in a very good position as far as the amount of funds available.
Yep, yep, very good, very good. Alan, keep your thoughts coming my way, if you would, please, sir. I appreciate it. It really helps me. And I'll be back in touch with you soon. We'll have another conversation.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chip, for the opportunity to serve. I really appreciate it.
You bet. That is Alan Hoskins, president of American Farm Mortgage and Financial Services. We're going to get this Farmer Forum started when we get back on AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Talking with Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, kind of steady, even firm trade in the overnight, but we're posting some losses in the grains now. What's happening?
Well, that's right, Chip. We got the daytime trade here, and the sellers gained a little bit more confidence, and we're under, you know, moderate pressure in corn, soybeans, and wheat here. Wheat's leading us down, specifically the winter wheat contracts, and I think that what we're seeing is the funds are dumping some long positions there. Continue to talk about those rains moving through Eastern Europe and the Black Sea region, and that's putting some pressure on the market right now.
All right, gotcha. Beans are feeling just a touch heavy right now, aren't they?
Yeah, corn and beans both. Monday's okay. Lows are still holding for now. If we drop below those, then last week's lows aren't far behind, and the contract lows aren't far behind that, especially for the corn market. So I think that we're at kind of critical levels here from a technical standpoint, both for corn and soybeans.
Gotcha, gotcha. Look over at the livestock trade, and there's not a change, plus or minus, over more than a dollar change. It's kind of a quiet day over there.
Yeah, really quiet, actually. We're seeing just a little bit of strength in the front end of the live cattle market. Some cash trade coming in about $95 on the early stuff here this week, and I think just confirmation of that, the big discount that the futures hold to the cash market, has given us just a little bit of price strength, but not much there. On the hog side, favoring the downside, but Monday's gap is still open in June hogs, and that's important support to hold here near term.
Yeah, and it's good news that we're starting to see some of these packing plants for hogs come back online. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
And the Farmer Forum is sponsored by the America's Conservation Ag Movement. Foundation partners in the program include Trust in Food, which is a Farm Journal initiative, the Farm Journal Foundation, USDA, A's, NRCS, the American Farmland Trust, Corteva, Ducks Unlimited, National Corn Growers Association, National Pork Board, Sanderson Farms, Syngenta, Nature Conservancy, and Valent. Welcome back. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Yes. Speaking of the Ace of Spades, you've bankrupted your share of casinos, haven't you? As I understand it, you're quite the shark. And I believe you and the president have that in common, that you've bankrupted casinos. different methods.
Yes.
Very different methods, but you know, still the same result.
And on different sides of that bankruptcy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Oh, man. Let's get this Farmer Forum started. We got Chad Lehman over in Central Illinois joins us right now. Chad, thank you so much for making time for us this morning. How are you?
Good morning, Chip. Thanks for the opportunity to be on your show today. I'm doing well.
You bet. Good, good. Let's bring in Mike Appert from North Dakota right away here. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Good, doing good. We got some rain up here. We're actually rained out, so we got nothing going on. So good to be on the call.
Good. When'd you finish up harvest, Mike?
Well, we're not done yet. We still have corn standing that we're trying to get at. It's wet, and, you know, we're having such a hard time here. We're so wet. The roads, we can't really get to fields either. You know, the roads aren't in good enough shape to use, so we got kind of a dilemma up here.
Yeah, it is a dilemma. And you guys are dealing with a lot of water up there, a lot of soggy field conditions. You know, people don't like to talk about the idea that we're going to see some prevent plant that started last fall up in North Dakota. They seem to have forgotten about that, but your problems did start last fall, didn't they?
Yeah, they really did. As we rolled into, you know, August, we got really wet, and then we were full, and then we just kept getting moistures, you know, September, October, and snow, quite a bit of snow all winter, and yeah, it's just wet, just wet.
Yeah, and so you've still got some corn that you're trying to get out of the field, but do you have combines and planters rolling at the same time up there, Mike?
We did the other day. Yeah, we were trying to do a little each, you know, the other day, but Yeah, we that's kind of what we're doing. We're combining it as we can get it, but yeah, we just need it to dry off.
Yeah, Chad, isn't that what we're all looking for? You know, that opportunity to continuously crop.
Oh yeah, that sounds like a blast. I'm really jealous.
Boy, no kidding. You're dealing with water now, Chad.
Yeah, we've here in Central Illinois have really been rainy the last couple of weeks. We had a really good stretch of planting starting about April 3rd. I think we started putting beans in the ground and had a couple, 2-3 weeks of really nice running. Most of us have a good chunk of the beans in. In fact, we've got beans up, and I'm a little concerned about Saturday morning what this forecast lows are. Did you see that?
Yeah. Yeah, for here, we're looking at like 30 degrees, something like that. So getting just under freezing.
Same here. Yeah, 29 or 30. And so a little concerned about the beans that are out of the ground. I guess we're gonna see what they can handle. I would say guys are 25 to 50% complete on corn around here, but nothing happening in the last couple weeks.
Man, another break for you guys. That's a lengthy break. That's got to get frustrating. And you know, we're talking about the challenges that we're facing, that farmers are facing in the spring of 2020. And Davis and I, it's been a little easy to forget the planting challenges being here in Northeast Iowa, because it's just they got in the field and they haven't quit until – they were done, or yesterday when it got tacky, and that's about it. It's crazy over here what's going on. Mike, what the spring of 2020, this is going to be, where's it going to end up for you? Do you feel like you're going to get all your intended acres planted, or is there going to be some prevent plant for you up there?
Oh, we're going to have prevent plant, and it'll, you know, obviously probably just be a record large number for us. You know, we actually didn't have hardly any prevent plant last year, but you know, it wasn't too far south of us into South Dakota where they really had a mess, you know, and that kind of crept a little bit north, so we're fighting that, and we'll have, you know, the amount of prevent plant that we're going to have will be record large. I don't know where it's going to end up yet, because we're not really to the end of our planting season. We're just kind of getting going. But you can just see that there's going to be and the other thing that's interesting is not just maybe some PP acres, but the swapping around of acreage up here is something like I've never seen. I've been a seed dealer since 1991, and, you know, I see a little bit of switching here and there, but nothing like this year where I think corn acres are going to drop in this area. Well, it's going to be well over 50% drop. It's probably more like a 75% drop in corn acres. It just, you know, it doesn't work. The ethanol industry got hurt so bad in this energy fallout that because the corn just isn't worth anything, and nobody can really grow it to make it work. So
Mike,
we're switching to other crops, you know.
Is that the biggest market influence that you're looking at up there right now, is the damage that's been done to the ethanol industry?
Well, it sure is. I mean, that's going to be what really puts the hurt in the agricultural industry for the grain farmer. You know, the row crop farmer really can't escape the, you know, what happened in ethanol, because it's going to catch them here on the corn market. So corn's cheap, basis is getting worse, and, you know, really a lot of these plants, I think, if they haven't shut down yet, they're idling back, or, you know, and demand for corn is just dropping, and it's a little concerning because I don't think we're adjusting the supply side fast enough. We need less corn acres is what we need. And I just don't know if we're going to get there fast enough.
Right, right. Chad is a hog producer there in central Illinois. Think about that feed side of the market there for a bit. I mean, over the years, I've seen hog producers lose money feeding really cheap corn. People like to think that the lower cost inputs automatically translates into positive margins for those hog producers, but they don't, do they?
It's kind of funny as I'm listening to Mike describe the shutdown of the ethanol plants up there and thinking it's been, 2.5 weeks probably since we've sourced any DDGs out of local plants here, either because there's none available or because of the price. And so it's when you figure DDGs making up 20-30% of a hog ration and that all going away quickly here, it certainly has upped our use of corn for sure. Yeah.
And
I would be curious if I could just ask Mike, I was just wondering what crops are, if you're not planting corn, what are you planting? Are you going to soybeans then, or is there something else?
You know, there's going to be some switching to soybeans, some edible beans, a lot of sunflowers. You know, sunflowers seems to be what's gobbling up a lot of acres. And then I just think it's going to be some prevent plant acres. So I think kind of an all of the above is just going to replace the corn acreage this year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, Chad, what have you done on your rations for the hogs? Are you trying to slow things down and delay some marketings?
Well, if there's a silver lining on anything right now, it's what we've been able to accomplish on slowing pigs down. We changed rations pretty radically about between 4 and 5 weeks ago in an effort to cut growth down significantly. And so essentially going to pulling all the calories and the energy out of these diets. And we are with the pigs we're able to ship right now, we are hanging in there at that 300-310 pound animal, and they should be at 345-355. Okay. And at those heavy weights, no packers can hang those pigs. And so we have been far more successful slowing pigs down than we thought we were going to, Chip.
Good. Has that made it possible for you to avoid the decision that nobody in the hog industry wants to make right now, Chad?
So far, yeah, we've not had to make it. We've just made a lot of decisions preparing to make it. So what does this look like when it comes down to, because it is going to come down to that where the backlog is just too great.
Right. Yeah. And what we're talking about here, everybody, and hog producers and most of the listeners from farm country know what we're talking about. But for the consumers out there, we're talking about having to euthanize market ready hogs. And that is a decision that, well, no, you know what? The decision people want to make and the decision that we want to make is that, no, we're not going to have to do it. But unfortunately, it's happening. It's happening. I think in some areas it is happening to a much larger degree with a much larger number of animals being euthanized than what people might think are already. Hey, when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation about that decision-making process, and we'll talk a little bit more about the finances and the federal support right here on the Farmer Forum on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway.
American Agriculture, Farms On, for our family and yours.
Farmer Farm is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement. America's Conservation Ag Movement is a national partnership designed to help all U.S. farmers more rapidly scale the adoption of conservation agriculture. You can learn more by going to www.agweb.com/ACAM. We've got a Farmer Forum going. Mike Appert from North Dakota, Chad Lehman from Illinois. And Chad, we were talking about the potential and having to potentially euthanize some market ready hogs. Nobody wants to go that route. Unfortunately, we are going that route. That will help to control the backlog of hogs, but it won't get rid of the backlog, will it, Chad?
No, you're right. We've wrapped our minds around the fact we're going to have to euthanize a large number of pigs. I mean, so now it's a math problem. How many are we going to have to? And so if you figure that we're backing up almost 250,000 pigs a day right now, because we're half capacity with packers, that's over 1 million a week, or roughly 1 million a week. So right now we're probably somewhere getting close to 2.5 million pigs backed up that they're not going to be able to get brought back into line. They're out of line and we have to do something with them. And so the conversations between all the states and in terms of the pork associations has been, how do we do this the most humanely, the most efficiently? And so it's not a pretty picture to talk about. No. It's the reality though, and it's the decisions we're faced with.
That is certainly a decision that nobody wants to have to make. Okay. I want to move on and talk a little bit about what I was talking about with Alan Hoskins from American Farm Mortgage Financial Services at earlier in the show. The federal supports, you guys, I'll go to Mike first on this. Are they adequate? Is another round needed? I've got some opinions on it. I'd like to know what yours are.
Well, they're probably not adequate to get anywhere close to shoring up the whole industry. You know, I think it just seems like the 125,000 payment limit per commodity is going to be kind of a bottleneck, because I think corn is probably the commodity that's most disrupted. So, you know, it only takes 1,000 or 1,200 acres of corn or whatever it's going to be to cap that out. So that's probably inadequate. So there's going to be some big gaps, obviously, and agriculture is going to get hurt in this as an industry. But I think any cash influx, obviously, is welcomed, and it helps. But I still think we're going to come out of this pretty beat up. You know, it's not going to be business as usual when we come out of this deal. So,
Yeah. Corn is going to feel the effect of it. There's no doubt. And 125,000 doesn't cover a whole lot of input costs for most operators out there. But Chad, the same payment cap applies to hog producers, applies to dairy producers, applies to beef producers. And the payment cap, I think, is what's getting the most pushback on the CFAP program, right?
Yeah, no question that the caps are the big sticking point. And Mike's right. They're not sufficient to come anywhere close to helping out. I mean, the other piece to this from the hog sector is, what do we want to do about indemnifying producers for euthanizing pigs?
Yep.
There's EQIP funds available, which are going to cover a portion of the cost of, I mean, because euthanizing pigs is not going to be free. You've got to dispose of them. So EQIP funds may cover a portion of that, but anybody who has gone through the EQIP application process, I think would really have to think hard about whether they want to go through that whole process before they begin euthanization.
Yeah. It'd overwhelm EQIP. Yeah.
For sure. No doubt about it. There's the same with like FEMA funds. It would overwhelm that too. I think what's hardest for people is to wrap their mind around the scale of the problem we have here.
Yep. Yeah. Chad, I think that is 100% correct. The dollar amounts that we are talking about in this industry right now and the disruption in dollar amounts would blow a lot of people away when you get right down to it. But part of the problem here, guys, is that we've gotten used to words like trillion. Who would have ever thought that we'd get used to using a dollar figure in trillions? It just blows me away. Mike, we're getting down there on time. What are you thinking most about here for the week ahead and as you look into the rest of spring?
Well, we're going to see what kind of planting window we actually have here. We're very wet, and, of course, a lot of fields aren't really fit to seed. So, the spring has been slow going. There isn't a lot done. Just got to see if we can get a window to plant here and see what happens here in the next, 2 weeks.
Yeah. I just had a thought, too. Chad, what we really need for this CFAP program, the $19 billion that's implemented through USDA, we need some clarity on how that's all going to be used first, right?
Well, I would love to see some clarity because, I'm trying to look 4 to 5 weeks out right now in terms of shipping and bringing in weaned pigs. And without knowing what is going to be indemnified, it's awfully hard to make those decisions.
Boy, it sure is. It sure is. And if you're having trouble making that decision, the guy that's running the farrowing operation and supplying your pigs, he's having the same tough decisions and challenges. So it's that ripple effect on down through the supply chain is really something else. Mike, thank you so much, buddy. We'll talk with you again soon.
Sounds good. Have a good spring, Chip.
You bet. Chad, good luck to you, my friend. We'll talk to you soon as well.
Thanks for talking today, Chip. Appreciate it.
You bet. All right, that's Chad Lehman, Illinois. Mike Appert up in North Dakota. Come back this afternoon. Chad Hart from Iowa State University right here on AgriTalk.